Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should.
Leading me on, you and me so long.
Here's your host, Mark Davin.
All right, folks, welcome to another episode of Guitar Radio Show. Our next guest is the epitome of why I do this show. I love having, you know, of course, I love having big name guests on the show. I love having, you know, Leslie Wests and Jimmy Vaughns and people like that on the show. But our next guest is the reason why I do this show. He has a new record out. It just came out September 6th, and it's called The Greenhouse Sessions. And it is by far, and it's an EP, and it by far it's the best record I've heard all year. It is so, so good. It's definitely going to go into the top 20 for this year when we do our year-end show. You can get The Greenhouse Sessions on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Google Play, CD Baby, and anywhere you can download music. He is from Sao Paulo, Brazil. The name of the record is Pedro, The Greenhouse Sessions. Please welcome to Guitar Radio Show, Pedro Cordeiro. How are you, sir?
Hey, man, I'm good. I appreciate the words. Very, very happy, very honored to be here. And very glad that you dig the music that is out there.
It's really great, you know. And, you know, I was struggling to decide which song I was going to open the show with, you know.
Right.
And I was like, well, I want them to hear him, you know, I want them to hear him playing right away because they can really grasp where he's at because he's got such great tone. You know, so I was thinking about playing Morning Blues first. And then I said, you know what?
Right.
I was like, you know what? Song number three, it's the first song on the record. It's called Song Number Three. That song is just stuck in my head. It is such an earworm. I said, no, I got to start with this song because it's got so much maturity to it and so much soul and so much feel, and the guitar work as you move into the song becomes, it just blossoms. It turns into this thing that I wanted everybody to hear that. So that's the song we started the show with. It's called Song Number Three, and it's so great. Folks, the only downside to this record is there's only four songs.
Yeah.
As soon as it's over, you're like, whoa, wait a minute, give me more, you know?
I appreciate that, yeah.
So you are so immersed in music where you're from, and everything you do, I mean, you're a guitarist, you're a singer, you're a songwriter, you're a producer, you've played in tribute bands, you've worked on Carnival Cruise Lines. I mean, you know, you're a producer for, I think you did a project called Marla's Mind, was it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which are a killer band.
They're amazing. Yeah. I really, really encourage people to check it out, too. They're amazing rock music, like heavier kind of grunge stuff.
Yeah, super cool. And you really, it seems to me that you look at music like it's, you know, like I do, like a buffet table. It's like, okay, it's all good. It's all of this, whether it's blues, whether it's jazz, whether it's funk, whether it's metal, whether it's grunge, whatever, it's all good. Bring it in. I want to eat it all. I want to take it all in. That's the impression.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So has your whole life, I mean, since childhood been about music?
No, not really. I started playing guitar when I was 14, so that is early, but not as early as a lot of people that I know. But, you know, I actually, that's a funny story, because I started playing because of that video game Guitar Hero. I had that video game, and one of my friends was like, oh, man, you have to try this, and we went straight into Sweet Child of Mine, and I was like, what is this? I need to do this. Like, I need this in my real life. That same friend that showed me the video game had an acoustic guitar, and he was showing me, like, oh, you can do this, and you can do this, and you can play, like, nothing else matters, or just the open strings, you know, and, like, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, it was a it was the little push that I needed. And from there on, I just like really nagged my mom about buying an electric guitar, and she bought a like $30 electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And that was it. You know, from there on, it was just music like every day, which is, I think, really good for a person who's still in that age, you know, because I had so many years of listening to everything that was not rock music,
right?
And my whole childhood was a lot of Brazilian music, obviously, and my dad was a big Phil Collins fan,
mm-hmm.
and my mom was all about the Brazilian music. So I had all that, and then when I was kind of like in school, mm-hmm. my friends would listen to like pop music that was on MTV and kind of stuff like that. So like Justin Timberlake and whatever else you would hear from that mm-hmm. whole age. And then when rock like was a thing for me, it just ate up my whole entire revenue I had for listening to music and that. On those years, which was awesome. So I was always very big on music, but I never played music until I was 14. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is like a good age to start. I think the better, but when you're a teenager, you kind of have a little bit more sense to what you
mm-hmm.
want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're really passionate about something, you know, it becomes like your goal to be good at that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And so what, you were playing in cover bands and you were playing with anybody who you could get with, right?
Yeah, man. I was very lucky to be like in several like circles of musicians who were really, really good. And I studied in a big school in São Paulo that's called EMT,
mm-hmm.
And they had some of the best like guitar players in the country there,
mm-hmm.
and I was just kind of trying to like start to take this into a more serious approach, and I would always like play in school and whatever talent show was happening and that kind of thing, but. When the first opportunity came to like play live, we would play like really dodgy dive bars and very weird places. And it always be cool for me because I got to be like the young person in that mm-hmm. scenario. And mm-hmm. it was like, it's a very good learning experience, I think, because everyone is older and they've seen so much more out right. of all those experiences.
Right.
And they kind of like, lead you down the path of less struggle, you know?
Right. Well,
so that was very cool.
You got the opportunity to be a sponge in that situation and
exactly.
and be able to soak it all up and take in from all those people. Yeah, that, I mean, that is huge. It absolutely is. Yeah, I know that, who was it? I think it was Albert King who said, never be the best guy in the band. Because
yeah, man.
Then you've got nowhere to go. You got no way to learn anything.
absolutely yeah. And I think that's so cool though. I don't know, it's just like a cool experience to be the guy that everyone tries to teach, you know, that everyone tries to like
mm-hmm.
lead into success, because you get all those people and they're all trying to like guide your experience into the best it can be. Mm-hmm. And if you have that same mindset, it is a very powerful thing, I think.
Yeah. Well, and you went from being a student at that school to being a teacher later, right?
Yeah. That was very cool. I used to be involved in the band practice
uh-huh.
classes.
Uh-huh.
And I would do all of them, like all the styles of music that were available.
Mm-hmm.
So we had like Brazilian music and jazz, and, rock and pop and instrumental, all of that stuff. And I would try to play all of them. Obviously, not very well, but you know, you can't really be that good at everything. But mm-hmm. I think it's really good to like walk those roads, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool. So you kind of start to pick up a little bit of every kind of instrument because you're there all the time, and you see the bass player doing his thing, and you see the drummer doing his thing. So I kind of started like trying to jump on different things, and one day the teacher couldn't teach that class anymore because he had like personal appointments and things. So he was like, "Well, you're the guy that knows how to play drums a little bit and bass, and you can like carry the thing." So he asked me to do it, and it was very cool. I did that for 4 years straight. I was teaching band practice, and then later just did. I started to teach vocal lessons, which is also a very weird experience for a guitar player because I was always a guitar player first, you know.
Right.
And right. You just have to understand. Like now, all of a sudden, I have to teach this entire new instrument that is an instrument that you can't see, and it's super weird. But it was super cool, man. I love teaching in that way of just getting people who are as passionate as I was when I was just learning, you know, and trying to like feed them the same kind of useful information that so many people gave me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And do you find that when you teach, because I've always found this, that when you teach, you also are learning and you're taking and it makes you start to think about your instrument, whatever instrument it is. So it makes you start to think about it in a different way, and it actually helps you expand your mind.
Yeah, man, so much. And I think that it's very interesting because sometimes we all of us guitar players go through that, and you know that sometimes you're not as passionate about your instrument as it could be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It goes in waves, and sometimes a student just asks you about the right thing at the right time, and you're like, all of a sudden you're like, yeah, that is cool, like, mm-hmm. why am I not doing that, you know.
Right.
And then as you're trying to like figure it out to teach him, you're also just figuring out things yourself, because you know life is a learning curve, and we all get to just like learn and learn and learn and learn. But that is very cool that sometimes a person that has no idea of something is pushing you to become more passionate about your instrument again.
Right.
You know.
Right. For sure. So out of all of the, you know, you've been involved in so many different types of projects. You know, I mean,
yeah.
you were even in a Black Sabbath tribute band, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, to be doing all those different types of music, what made you land on the type of music that you're doing now with the Greenhouse Sessions? What was that the be all end all for you as far as the type of what kind of statement you want to make?
Oh, yeah, man. It's a very long journey that I don't really understand that well. So like it was kind of always set in my mind from the moment that I started playing that I wanted to be in a rock band, right? And I wanted to do rock music. And when I started playing guitar, my favorite band was Deep Purple, and I would learn every guitar solo and every part, and I would learn some of the keyboard solos and do all that. So in my mind, it was very set that like I had to have a band, and the band would have to have a cool name, and we're going to have to do like some cool guitar parts, and someone else is going to sing, and all that kind of stuff, you know. And we start trying to do those things, and it's very hard. Like everyone who's had a band knows that it's so hard to have agreements. Mm-hmm. Between 3, 4, 5 people, you know.
Yeah, it's hard.
And one of my friends was like, he has a band that's very, very successful in Brazil, and he told me, he was like, a band only works really well when it's not really a democracy. There has to be someone who has that final say. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you're never going to agree to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, I understand that, but that's not really how I liked to work, you know? I liked that vibe and that whole thing of being together and creating things. But mm-hmm. we just tried and tried and tried, and like I had several different projects that go up to a certain point and then they get dropped out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the guys decided to get married and not do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or one of the people's going to move to a different country, or one of the people can't get enough hours off work to do that show that we need to do, you know? And it's just like a hard road to do all those things. And I still want to do it one day, you know, to have like my heavier guitar oriented things more like rock and roll ideas out into the world one mm-hmm. day. But this came into life because I just had all these ideas, and I always loved to play blues. It was always my thing because it's so freeing as a guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And I always loved to do it. I had a few songs that I was really trying to push into becoming like rock songs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those songs was that song that we talked about, song number 3.
Yeah.
So I had an earlier version of it that was in a different key, and it was like a lower key and way heavier drums and way different arrangement with a lot more distortion and what more things. And then I kind of started to think, like, why am I putting so much makeup on this song, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you take all those things out, mm-hmm. it's just kind of like a blues song. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, maybe we can make this work. And as I said, like, I work for Carnival Cruise Lines, and do like cruise ship gigs where you're away from home for a long time. And I was there playing, and we started doing a songwriter circle on the ship where all the musicians would come and play their own songs. And I was like, well, maybe I'll try to do an arrangement for this song. We started putting it together. I wrote like a very simple chart for the band to follow, and then the band would play my song with me, which was awesome. And everyone started to be like, hey man, you should record that. So when I got back to Brazil, I called a bunch of friends that played together for a long time, and then we worked on that song. And then that was in February of this year. We're working on that song. And then Kansas City Sunshine, which is another song that I just wrote out of a creative spur in the end of the year. I decided to throw that one in too. And then once I had those two songs, I kind of had like the vibe of the whole project going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little easier to figure out
mm-hmm.
where the next step would be.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in Dallas, my girlfriend lives in Dallas, and I spent a little bit of time there every once in a while. So when I was in Dallas, I started like working on this groove that I had, which eventually became the song Next Round.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was on the ship, we had like, when you're on the ship, you're away from your family, you're away from everybody that you know, really, for like a long amount of time. It's pretty hard. So like I had one of those days where it was just not a great day. It was hard. It was hard to get through it, but we had a show at the end of the night. So we had the set, and when we played the set, I was like, oh, let's play a Jimi Hendrix song, because those are always like, you know, they take the weight off your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, who's the guitar player, with me on the band, which is an amazing guitar player, he wanted to play Red House. And I was like, okay, let's play Red House. So we played Red House, and it was like incredible. People like loved it. It was so like a very, like you're leaving everything you have on that stage, because everyone had everyone had had that same awful day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's just shedding that energy off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's amazing about the blues, is that you like a lot of kinds of music, but like the blues gives you that outlet. It's immediate. It's like just the outlet for all your energy to be left right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we played that song, and it's a big blues, it's a big slow blues. So from there, and we went to sleep, and I woke up the next day, and I was like, that was incredible. What happened? What, like, you know, like I felt like my day turned around because of those
six minutes
that we played.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I started like thinking about all those things and all the things that happened that day. And that's where morning blues came from, which is also big slow blues and in B. So, you know, has a common ancestor with Red House, mm-hmm. which to me is pretty cool that we can, that the blues is also like that. You can get inspiration from so many things without having to copy anything, you know?
Yeah, for
sure.
Because
it's so easy to make it your own.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and I think because it's a type of music that is really based on feeling, that
exactly.
it gets interpreted differently per person because of how they're feeling or their intention at that moment, which is great. You know, but what's interesting that I found, you know, you're calling this a blues record, and you know, it would definitely probably get categorized as that, but there's, and I mean this in the best possible way, there's a pop sensibility to these songs.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I mean that in the best way. Like, for me, I hear song number 3, Kansas City Sunshine, and Next Round, and I say to myself, okay, these songs stack up perfectly with, say, what Doyle Bramhall's doing right now. And
yeah.
and what Tedeschi Trucks is doing right now, and with what Los Lobos is doing right now, and people like that. And Morning Blues is the one track that to me is the most straight ahead blues track on the record.
Yeah.
Would that be safe to say?
Oh, absolutely. I think that to me, I feel like everything that we do is kind of like an evolution. And to me, listening to pop songs was so ingrained in my childhood and in my you know, early teenage years that
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like you kind of get used to listening to those chord changes and to those kind of things running one into the other like a pop song does, you know, like
right.
a little bridge into a chorus into this. And that gets invaded on your core, you know, songwriter shit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
you just kind of expect to hear that thing, and that's kind of how I try to write music. Is I start with an idea, either a vocal idea or a guitar idea, and I just kind of like try to listen to what comes next in my head,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of where it goes for me, is that kind of pop / not so pop sound, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I liked it when it started happening, because I never really planned to be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna put the little pop in this so that it can like, so that everyone can listen. Like that's not, that wasn't really the case, and that made me really happy that it just happened like an organic way, and it came out like a different sounding, you know, thing that, I got happy with the result of the songs, and I think that pop has a lot to do with, like, I love John Mayer and
mm-hmm.
And like Johnny Lang and mm-hmm. those kinds of guys.
Yeah,
they're absolutely my favorite. Like Marcus King.
Yeah,
those kinds of guys.
Yeah,
know?
And that's the thing, is this is right in line with that and is as good, if not better, in some respects. I mean, it really is like you, like I just got, you know, the Crossroads Guitar Festival. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
Eric Clapton. To me, when I hear this record, I say, oh my God, why isn't he playing there?
So, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it.
You know, it's like you're right in line with that, and this material is so strong in that way. You know, I think it. You know, it's only a matter of time.
No, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. And it's so we try to get all those things. Like when I am absolutely fascinated with new music all the time. Like I'm constantly checking out my Discover Weekly on Spotify and those kinds of things. And I always want to learn about new things. And obviously, like John Mayer, Eric Clapton, they're like big names that basically even the person who doesn't know what their music sounds like knows their name, right? But once I started learning about new people that were like smaller names in terms of Brazil, especially because it's so far to like things take a little while to get there, you know. So like once I learned about Marcus King and I like listened to a song that's called Rita Is Gone on YouTube, that's Jam in the Van. It's an amazing performance. And my friend showed it to me and I was like, who is this person? Like, I have to listen to whatever they have put out into the world. So like I devoured those two first albums, and then when this last one came out, Carolina Confessions, also that one lived in my repeat on Spotify because it's like it's so good. And I feel like that kind of shapes, you know, where I feel like a song that you write today is kind of, it's half of your essence and half of what you are today.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because, and so like, that was a lot of the stuff that I was listening to when I was writing these songs, especially Marcus King Band and Tedeschi Trucks Band and all of their stuff is, you know, I don't know, if I had to ever put like a top five albums, those two, like Carolina Confessions and Let Me Get By by Tedeschi Trucks Band would probably be in there. So that has a lot to do with that sound too, you know.
Yeah, you should go check out, I did an interview with Marcus.
That's cool.
Yeah, episode 131 at guitarradioshow.com. You should check it out. It's really interesting because the first record had just come out and things were just starting to really start to percolate. And I mean, when I heard him the first time, I was just astounded. It was funny. Someone had sent me a video of him playing in Asheville.
Okay.
Where they're from. And and they were playing in a club, and it was this 2-hour video, multi-camera thing, and it was, you know, the sound was great, and it was part of some live, like I think cable access TV thing there in Asheville. And it was I was just like, what's happening right now? What is going on here? And you know, and then at that point he was what, 21, I think? I think, you know, and it's just like, holy God, that's just incredible. That's exactly how I felt when I heard your EP. I was like, what is going on? What is happening right now? This is amazing.
Man, I appreciate it. That makes me very happy to hear.
So take me through the recording process. Was this record recorded live or was this a step process?
All the songs were recorded live, yeah. We recorded two songs in February, and then I had a short period of time on the ship, and then we recorded the last two songs in June. I think in June. Song number three in Kansas City Sunshine were both recorded in February, and then Next Round and Morning Blues were both recorded in June. Over like just the one, say the same on the same day, we all set up in the studio. The studio's called the Greenhouse Studios.
Right.
That's why the album's called the Greenhouse Sessions.
And, right.
This is very cool. Like, I think that a studio is so important to the whole thing of the whole vibe of the album, because it's like when you have a good workspace, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it makes you vibe more. It makes you like want to work more. And so we recorded at that place, and we just like set everything up. The drummer was in the room with all the microphones, and then we were in the little recording room, and that's what you can see in that video that
right.
I think you saw.
Right.
There's three of us, like keyboards, bass, and guitar in there. The vocals were recorded separately for all the songs, because it just works a little better that mm-hmm. way, because it's different microphones, so mm-hmm. it wouldn't be as effective to have it there in the middle of the
yeah,
in the middle
get
of
a lot
the noise.
Of that, get that bleed, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it was honestly, it was so much fun. I've never recorded anything live like that, because in Brazil it's very common that you were gonna record something, you put a click in the ear of the drummer, he records the song, and then everyone just puts everything back. I was like, but that's not what I want. Like, we had a show that we played in the end of the year in December, and I called two of those musicians, so the drummer and the bass player, and we had like an amazing time. We really felt like we were connecting on stage, and everything was like happening the way it's supposed to happen. So I was like, I want to recreate that to the max that I can, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the whole idea. We just went into the studio with the idea of, let's just vibe off each other, and just like, we know the arrangement. So like, I also tried to keep everything not too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
so that we could just like feed off of each other. And I think that for me as a guitar player, we kind of excel when what's going on under us is great.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember this is one of my friends, he's from Brazil. He lives in Charlottesville, and he has a lot of stuff out there. It's called Silas Fernandez. Good metal guitar player. And that guy, he always told me. He told me one day, we were watching a video of Gary Moore playing Red House. It's a very famous video, right, on YouTube. It's like 9 minutes long, and Gary Moore just goes off playing
right.
Red House. It's crazy. Like, it's a crazy experience going on. And we were watching that video, and he was like, he paused the video, and he was like, do you even hear the quality of the bass and drums that are happening right now?
Mm.
And then I stopped to listen. And like, it was it's Pino Palladino on bass.
Oh.
I don't really recall the drummer, but he's amazing. It's like, so it's like, it's such a solid groove, right? And it's such a, like a creative part of the process, because mm-hmm. then Gary can just do his thing, and he knows that everything else is taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I came from with all those things, with all those like solos in the record. There's a bunch of them, but in song number three, that solo in the end, to me, is like one of my favorite parts of the album. But it wouldn't be anything if the band wasn't so connected, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that wasn't like a live recording, that to me would have never been. The same, you know.
So you didn't go back and do guitar solos. You did them live with the band there.
No, yeah. All of the guitar solos are live.
That's why they're so emotional. Because
yeah,
it's happening together.
Yeah, that's. I really feel that's the best way that I found to express myself. Like, I love to create solos and to like do the whole song, like the solo writer thing, where you can take a look at this part and think to yourself what's going to be the best thing to do and what's the pretty idea. But for that kind of music specifically, I wanted to be inserted in that creative thing that the drummer and the keyboard player and the bass player were doing, mm-hmm. and not just play the chords. So the only song that has chords under the solos, the guitar solos for guitar, is Next Round, mm-hmm. because we had so many, like, we had a keyboard solo in there and a little bit of a drum solo, so mm-hmm. and bass too had like an exchange, and so I had to kind of sort of keep the time for mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So that's the only one. Every other song was all live with the solos and everything. I think we're trying to keep it as simple as we could so that it wouldn't be a lot of trouble when mixing also. Sure. And I just wanted people to be able to hear what we were, you know, playing like it was a live show, but recorded properly, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. You know, what's also interesting too is the voice of your guitar really complements your actual vocals and vice versa. They are in the same place as far as quality and soulfulness and tone. It's one of those things that, you know, you don't hear a lot of times. Sometimes you hear a guitar player and they got a great tone, but then you hear their vocals and then you realize, well, their guitar tone is a lot more sharp or glassy. And whereas you have this symbiosis that's going on between your guitar and your voice that is really appealing. And I think that's part of it too. It's like, it's a perfect storm in the sense that the songs are good, the production was great, the performances were good, and your tone and your tone of voice all work together. It's you're very fortunate.
No, man, I appreciate it. Yeah. I definitely shout out my friends who mixed it. Like, this record was basically me calling in a lot of favors, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I definitely have to shout out the people that did it, and my friends who mixed the EP, because I also think that they did an amazing job. It's like it's very weird to hear what the first draft was and then to hear the final cut, mm-hmm. even though we're playing the exact same thing, because mm-hmm. nothing was put into the grid, right? Like, everything is just kind of the way it was, but tone wise they gave the EP life, you know?
Right. Well, they're like another member of the band.
Exactly. And yeah. it was incredible to see that happening, especially with the vocals, because to me, anything that has vocals in them, the vocals have to be like perfect, right. And that's what I like to hear when I'm like listening to music. It's like, okay, but like the mix on the vocals, to me, I'm very picky about it. I'm like, they have to have like the right amount of reverb, the right amount of whatever, and they did a really great job with that. It's always weird to hear yourself back, you know, to hear your own voice and stuff, but they did an amazing job. It was incredible. And the guitar tone, you know, like, we're all like, I feel like guitar players, at least like 90% of us are gearheads, and we all like search for things, and we're like, oh, but that pedal and that thing.
All right.
But I wonder if my cable could be a little better so that I don't lose any signal, you know? So that kind of thing was really cool to like, to do all that research and to like sit at home with all my pedals and be like, with all the pedals that I've collected through years of playing live gigs and stuff, and be like, what am I gonna actually use?
Right. Well, that's a perfect segue, Pedro, because I was gonna ask you, I was gonna ask you to walk us through your entire rig for the recording of this, starting with the guitar.
Oh, awesome. So yeah. So I used three different guitars for that EP, and then the first two songs. So next song number three and Kansas City Sunshine were recorded with my Strat, which is what you can see in that video.
Right.
That Strat is basically a John Mayer like copy. Strat is a custom made. It's a Brazilian brand. It's called Music Maker. And they just like they custom make whatever really you want, and I just wanted a John Mayer Strat because I was really in at the time. That was my first ever like custom guitar, and at the time I was really flirting with the idea that the guitar should have less like paint on it,
mm-hmm.
so that it could breathe better, mm-hmm. and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think is very, very makes a big difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important at this point in my life, but at that point, I thought it was really important. So that's where that guitar came from, and then on Morning Blues, I'm using my Les Paul, which is the same exact brand. It's just like a Les Paul standard. It has Slash Onico 2 Pro pickups on it, and it just sounds very solid. It's very thick piece of mahogany,
mm-hmm.
Which I love. And then on Next Round, I'm using my it's like a $150 kind of Les Paul Junior copy. I don't really know what brand made it. I bought it used. It's in absolutely poor shape, but it has one P90, and that's why I bought it. It's just like one pickup, mm-hmm. one P90, like Phil X style, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I switched everything on it. I bought it. It was absolute piece of garbage, and I just like kept only the body on it in the neck, and then switched tuning pegs, frets, like all the electric parts, the bridge. I switched the pickup, switched the knobs, everything.
Right.
And then it sounds great. It has that like P90 sound, mm-hmm. And it's the guitar that I have with me right now, and it's like it sounds just right for that kind of music. I feel like I'm really into the one pickup thing.
Yeah.
I used to have an EVH, the Frankenstein one, that's made by Fender. So it's like it has a killer like Strat body, and the neck is just like nice, and it has like a very flat radius, which is what I'm more used to. And so I'm very into the one pickup thing. But so those are the guitars, and then the pedals I used I used the same ones for all the songs. They were a Friedman Dirty Shirley is the main overdrive, and then I had a Wumpler Dumbness, which is like a Klon.
Yeah.
You know?
Killer pedal.
Yeah, it's nice. And it's the mini version, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like very tiny, and it fits the pedal board perfectly.
Yeah. I just had Brian on the show, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm amazed with all the Wumpler stuff. It's like it's incredible, and it all sounds so good. I also have like a Sovereign, and it just, yeah, they're all incredible pedals.
Yeah, they are.
But so yeah, I had a Dirty Shirley, and then the dumbness were the main distortion sounds that you can hear mm-hmm. on the EP. So the dirty Shirley is on all the time. It's always on. Mm-hmm. And then the dumbness was on for the solo of Kansas City Sunshine, and then we had a flashback delay, which I feel like everyone uses now. It's just like I see it in everyone's boards. So, but yeah, so I had a flashback delay, and for song number 3 solo, I used my Fuzz Face 70th anniversary edition, which is the one that has Jimi Hendrix's face on it. It's like orange and purple and beautiful.
Yeah.
So it was like I used that guy into the Dirty Shirley, into the flashback, and then out. And everything was recorded out into my Kemper.
So, oh, wow. So you're using a Kemper?
Yeah.
Holy cow. I would have never guessed that you were using a modeling amp on that record.
Yeah, man. I really like the idea of the Kemper because it takes away it takes away from the trouble of like miking the amp and doing all that.
Right.
I would still love to use a tube amp live, but that's not always what we can do, you know.
Yeah.
For instance, when we're on the ship, we sometimes can use amps. Sometimes they have a Fender like Hot Rod Deluxe, which right. are great, but sometimes they have no amps, and then we're kind of like, oh, what do I do now? I have my Kemper just basically for those situations. I really like to experiment with it, but I don't really use it in the way that everyone tries to use it, which is like for the main distortion in the
right
in the part.
So you're using it as you're using it as a clean platform.
Exactly. So what happened is that we went to a rehearsing studio to put the songs together and make them into something acceptable, and I just plugged all of those pedals that I talked about into a Fender twin reverb. Which is like a very classic amp that sure. everybody like has played before. It's right. like a Fender twin reverb, and I loved it. I was like, "Oh, this is the sound that I want. Like, this is the sound that I need. This is the reverb that I need. This is all the like, especially with the Strat. It was that whole like sound of the single coil pickups. It was what I needed for those songs. I felt like so. What I did is I found the exact same preset for my Kemper. So I just went on the Kemper and I was like, I want a Fender twin reverb, and they had it. And then I plugged it in into the studio, and it sounded virtually the same as it sounded in the rehearsal studio. And so it's like, so it was very interesting, because for me, I always wondered, I was like, I wonder if people can tell that this is a Kemper, but I
could not tell. I honestly, I was thinking to myself, okay, maybe he's using a Tweed, you know, yeah. or a Bassman. That's what, you know, or, you know, yeah. or a Twin. That's what I was thinking, something like that.
Yeah. So I like to use the Kemper that way with just the clean amp or whatever amp you need, and then put my pedals in front of it, because I think that sounds way more natural.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, like, I wish that I had a Clad Twin Reverb, and I wish that I had a Marshall Plexi and all that other things, but we kind of have to make do what we have. So
sure.
it was just at the time the more price friendly, like budget friendly option. Even though it costs a lot of money, it's still a lot less money than having all of those amps, you know.
Sure.
And so it was cool, and then I recorded with the Kemper with a twin reverb preset or the profile for song number 3 in Kansas City Sunshine, And then for next round, I used a Dumble profile.
Mm-hmm.
And for Morning Blues, I used a Two Rock profile with the Tumnus into it. The Tumnus like driving it.
Right.
And those sound really good in my opinion. They were nice. And I had just
Hello? You there? Did we lose you?
Oh, hey.
There you go. You're back.
Oh, there we go.
Go ahead.
So, I'm saying that I had just seen one of my favorite, like, young blues guitar players, which is Arturo Menezes. He's from Brazil also. And he's going to play at Crossroads this year. He won the contest part of it. Oh,
very cool.
So, yeah, it's awesome. He's going to play there. And I had just seen him play in Brazil with a Two Rock amp. And I was like, that sounds incredible.
Yeah.
I want that. Like, mm-hmm. I want that sound.
Yeah, that's what Doyle's using now. He went back to Two Rocks.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I also saw, I know that Eric Gales uses a Two Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is awesome. And it's like... Yeah, obviously John Mayer had the whole thing with the Two Rock
and everything else.
Yeah. John Mayer has had a lot of things.
The Dumbles and everything else, the Plexis.
Yeah, man. Yeah, but it's great. Like the Two Rock sounds amazing. And again, we're all gearheads. Like we could talk about this kind of thing forever.
Oh, forever.
And it's like, yeah. And also next round. What I was forgetting is that there's like a Bitch Shifter sound. That was a Pitchfork by Electro Harmonix.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's like, kind of like an octave down kind of thing.
Right, right. I'll tell you, man, I would have never known that you were using a profiling amp like that. It's interesting. I think that's really great that you're doing it in that way, because I know a lot of people, a lot of metal guys are starting to use Kemper or have been using Kemper, and you know, because they can get that boogie sound out of a toaster, and throw it through some 4x12s, and just blow.
It's just easy, to like for metal guys especially, because you can just give your Kemper line into the front of the house and just have whatever you want on stage.
Right.
Like a really small cab, even if you want.
Right.
And not have your stage volume be crazy. But yeah, in a perfect world, I would definitely use the real like Fender Twin, but I just didn't have one at the time. So it was a really good option,
Right. But I thought that was smart that you would use it as a clean platform and then ran all your pedals through it. And yeah, and the types of pedals that you suggest that you mentioned, those are exactly the type of pedals you want to put in front of a clean amp.
Exactly.
Because that's what I do here with a Vox, or a Magnetone, or even I'll run a Boss Katana that way too.
Oh, okay.
I'll run that clean and then just push everything through that,
Yeah, I mean, I started playing like rock music, and obviously like even in America it's not that easy to get a hold of like a Marshall Plexi,
No. But
in Brazil it's like twice as hard because it costs twice as much too.
Yeah, for sure.
So like in Brazil a Marshall Plexi costs probably as much as a normal popular car, Like I was born into the world of pedals very, very early on my guitar player because we had to like have a way to get all of that gain without having a Marshall stack on 10. So it was very cool to do all that research, and like we were always like, I've had all kinds of simulators too, but my thing is pedals. I have so many, and I have the exact same pedal board right here with me right now, and I have like three different kind of fuzz faces.
Yeah,
and I don't even
just
because I wanted to know the difference.
Well, it's funny because I had Brian Wampler and Josh Scott from JHS on the show. And we were talking about overdrive, and I'm an overdrive nut. I have such a huge collection of overdrives. And I said to them, I said, you know, for me, overdrives are like colors on a palette. If I was an artist, it's like colors it's like colors on a palette, because, you know, I can go, like, my favorite overdrive, my all time favorite, it's always on, is the Nobles ODR1, you know.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, on my board, on my main board, I have four boards. On my main board, it starts with the, you know, a wah, and then the ODR, and then an OCD, which is totally different. Yeah. They're totally different. And then a Love Pedal Super Sick Tone, which is totally different. You know, you know, they're all so different, you know. And then I have another board with a Tumnus on it, and, you know, and a Morning Glory. So it's like, you know, they're all so different, and they give you, they inspire you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's like, that's the part that I think a lot of people don't get, is that all of those things are so, they're creative fuel.
Yeah.
Like, because they're so different. And yeah. Like, and people don't get it. It was like, oh, if I get to a normal person, like my mom, for instance, my mom doesn't know anything about music.
No.
You know? And the first time we came to the U.S. in 2011, I was 18 and I wanted to buy a guitar pedal because it's like, here I can get whichever guitar pedal I want.
Right.
We went to Guitar Center and I ended up picking up the OCD and the Box of Rock by Z-Vax.
Right.
And which
Two different, very different.
Yeah. And I still own both of them. And my mom was like, oh, well, what's the difference between them? Like, what do they do? And I'm like, well, they're both distortion pedals or overdrive pedals. And she was like, well, but why'd you buy both then? And I was like, because they do different things. But, well, didn't you just say that they do the same thing? I'm like, no, I said they're the same kind of effect. They don't do the same thing. So it's very crazy that people never going to understand that part.
You know? When I said that to those two guys, they knew exactly what I meant. They went, absolutely, exactly. That's what it is. Yeah. It's colors. It's literally like, you know, I'm working in a project right now where I utilize, depending on what song is being played, I utilize a different overdrive.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
and I think that is so cool. Like, when the first time that I ever did a ship gig, I brought my big pedal board with me, and it had, and gladly we had a Hot Rod Deluxe, which is a amp that takes pedals beautifully.
It really does.
But I had probably like four different overdrives in my pedal board,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, which is the kind of thing that, like, a very practical guitar player would freak out about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like, why would you have four? I'm like, because they're all very weird and unique in their mm-hmm. own way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I even had two of the same, but like, I had the Box of Rock, and then I had the Distortron by Z-Vax, and they're both very similar, but at the same time, they're different enough there that it was worth to have both of them on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, man. Yeah, I'm definitely very into all those things, and just like checking out the different and being like, oh, but this pedal does the high end really, really well.
Well, yeah, and then you go from single coil to humbuckers, and how those pedals react, everything. How those guitars react to those pedals, it changes everything.
Everything.
Everything. Yeah.
And also, like, now that I'm playing like P90s more often,
right?
The same exact deal. It's like you switch to a P90, and it's all of a sudden it's a different game.
Yep. Absolutely.
And it's like how differently they clean up when you roll the volume down.
Right.
All those things are super, super cool to experiment with. Yeah,
I totally
especially
agree.
If you play a lot of fuzz like I do, it's like the fuzz is just like a whole different universe that you have to kind of get into before you can get a good sound out of it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny because back in the early days of my playing, which is a long time ago, I started with fuzz. There were no overdrives at that point. I started with fuzz, and then I stopped using pedals entirely throughout the 80s. the mid to late 80s, I didn't use pedals at all. It was a Hamer into a Mesa Boogie, and had a really good volume taper pot, so I could control everything from the guitar. And that's all That's all I needed. And but that was the type of stuff that I was playing at the time. And then all of a sudden, that's over, and I'm in the session work in the 90s and then the 2000s, and I'm like, oh, okay, I need a toolbox. And that's where the pedals start coming back in. So now I've been discovering fuzz in a whole nother way, like looking at the old fuzz tones. The old ones that have that when you really overdrive, when you push it, it gives you either the octave below or the octave above, and all that, MK2s, and just crazy. It's a rabbit hole that we could talk about forever.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole thing with the fuzz for me is I obviously always was into the Jimi Hendrix sound and the whole fuzz thing. But if you think about the Jimi Hendrix fuzz sound, it's so I don't know how you would describe it. It's like soft, it's like creamy, and it doesn't have like that very hard, bitter, like a high end to it.
Yeah. It was round.
So it's like, it's very round. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I love that. And then I was introduced to more like crazy, like fuzz tones. And like even David Gilmour uses a Big Muff, and it's still like very round and very, very pleasant to listen to. Yeah. And then I was introduced to that world all over again when I started listening to Rival Sons, which is definitely one of my favorite bands. And Scott Holiday has some of the best tones in rock and roll right now for me.
He gets that Jordan Boss tone sound.
Exactly.
It's still very round, but it sounds like there's a track by a band called The Music Machine. They were a psychedelic band in America. They had a song called Talk Talk. And you got to hear the guitar. Go listen to that track. You got to hear this track. The guitar part, the guitar lines on that, and the single note lines. There are those honking, they're harsh, but they're not oppressive, but they're exactly. that beep, beep, that buzzy sound. It's very interesting. And Scott does that. He's got that thing going on. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that the like Scott Holiday and like the Rival Sons really reignited my whole affair with rock and roll again.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, oh man, like, and people are always saying, oh, but you don't hear rock and roll the way you used to anymore. And I'm like, what? Have you heard the Rival Sons? Have you heard of Tyler Bryan and the Shakedown?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What are you talking about?
See, now there's a tour I'd like to see. Here's the tour I'd like to see. All right, you opening up. You're the first act. Okay. Tyler Bryant and the Shakedown, Vintage Trouble, and what's it called, Rival Sons.
Oh man, that would be my dream come true.
Wouldn't that be a trippy tour?
That would be my dream come true.
Put all those bands together for one tour. That would be amazing. Yeah. Be amazing.
Yeah, man. Tyler Bryan also is one of the guys that like uses fuzz in the most amazing ways for me.
Yeah.
Well,
he's a purist. Him and Mr. Whitford there, they're both real purists when it comes to that stuff. And they've got the best people behind them saying, "Hey, try this. Hey,
exactly.
Check this out." I mean, when your dad is Brad Whitford from Aerosmith.
It's very cool that to see like those two making music together, because it works out so well.
Yeah, they complement each other well.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just comes out in this super powerful, because like Tyler is obviously like a very, very good blues player too.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put together like all the riffs and the rock and roll influence, it just comes out as a super powerful, like riff oriented music that I absolutely love.
So what's next for you, man? What are you going to do with this? You've got it. It's amazing. Now we got to, now the world has to know.
Well, that's a good question, man. I'm, you know, I'm trying to like, push this EP out there like slowly to not, I'm not trying to like overflow people's, timelines and things with it.
Right.
Well, every now and then, like, set up a reminder of, like, hey, go listen to this, go listen to that.
Right.
But yeah, we're trying to, I'm trying to push that guy forward. Definitely going to start releasing more, like, videos of the recording.
Right.
And, like, just trying to kind of stir the pot, you know?
Well, you know, here you are, you're on this show, and today you've reached 21 countries.
That's amazing. So, I really appreciate that.
So what would you say to the people in those 21 countries about your music?
I really hope that you give it a listen, and I really hope that you dig it. It was made with a lot of love. It was, you know, very, very honest process, and it's a product that I'm really, like, me and all the people involved are really proud to be a part of, and hope that you dig it. We're just trying to make music that makes us happy and makes people that are listening feel that happiness too, you know?
Very cool. Well, I concur. You know, I got to tell you, man, this has been great to talk to you. I'm so glad that you made time for me and my audience. And I really love this record, man. It is so great. I'm going to be passing it on to a lot of friends of mine.
No, man, I appreciate it. It's been amazing. It's been an honor to be on your show. Very, very happy when you asked me to be here. And yeah, man. Well, we had a blast. Really good conversation. And I'm very, very, very glad that you dig the record. You can hear, you know, the love that was put into it.
Yeah, I hear the honesty. That's what I really liked.
Yeah.
Folks, the record is called, it's the big old name on the front, Pedro, The Greenhouse Sessions. It's named after the studio it was recorded in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And folks, you can get the record on, it's a 4-song EP. You're going to want more, I promise you. You can hear it, you can stream it, and you can buy it on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Google Play, CD Baby, and anywhere you can stream or download music. This is one of those ones, folks, where I tell you all the time, if you like it, stream it once and then go buy it. All right? That's what you need to do. If you want to hear more music like this from artists like this, then you need to buy their records, not just stream them. This is really, really great, Pedro. Thanks so much for being on Guitar Radio Show.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for inviting me. It's been a blast. So much fun. Honored to be here.
All right. Hold on 1 second, but we're going to sign off right here.
All right.
All right. Thanks, man. Thank you.
Guitar Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts.